Welcome, and thank you for joining Rayonier's third quarter 2018 teleconference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect now. Now I will turn the meeting over to Mr. Mark McHugh, Senior Vice President and CFO. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you and good morning. Welcome to Rayonier's Investor Teleconference covering third quarter earnings. Our earnings statements and financial supplement were released yesterday afternoon and are available on our website, therayonier.com. I would like to remind you that in these presentations, we include forward-looking statements made pursuant to the safe harbor provisions of federal securities laws. Our earnings release and Form 10-K filed with the SEC list some of the factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from the forward-looking statements we may make. They are also referenced on page 2 of our financial supplement. Throughout these presentations, we will also discuss non-GAAP financial measures, which are defined and reconciled to the nearest GAAP measure in our earnings release and supplemental materials. With that, let's start our teleconference with opening comments from Dave Nunes, President and CEO. Dave?
Thanks, Mark, and good morning, everyone. First, I'll make some high-level comments before turning it back over to Mark to review our consolidated financial results. Then we'll ask Doug Long, Senior Vice President, Forest Resources, to comment on our U.S. and New Zealand timber results. And following the review of our timber results, Chris Corr, Senior Vice President, Real Estate, will discuss our real estate results. We're pleased with our third quarter results given the challenging market conditions we faced. For the quarter, we achieved earnings per share of 18 cents and adjusted EBITDA of $83 million, reflecting solid operational performance across all our timber segments, as well as a strong contribution from our real estate segment. Our real estate results were driven by a $28 million timberland sale in New Zealand, comprised of approximately 5,000 productive acres at a price of over $5,600 per acre. In our southern timber segment, wet weather conditions led to lower harvest volumes, but also contributed to greater market tension and stronger pulpwood prices compared to the prior year quarter. In our Pacific Northwest timber segment, we continued to enjoy robust demand and strong pricing in the third quarter, which was partially offset by higher cut and haul costs. In our New Zealand timber segment, we saw some pricing softness as expected during the quarter, but are pleased with how quickly these markets have rebounded in response to reduced wood flows from the U.S. following the announcement of tariffs on log exports into China. With that, let me turn it back over to Mark to review our financial results.
Thanks, Dave. Before discussing our quarterly results, I wanted to highlight a change that we've made to our segment reporting. We've reclassified New Zealand timberland sales from the New Zealand timber segment to the real estate segment. This change took effect in the third quarter, and we have adjusted prior period results to reflect this reclassification. We made this change in order to better align our segment reporting with how we internally evaluate business performance, and we believe that it further provides for better comparability of our segment financial results from period to period. Moving on, page 5 of the financial supplement provides a summary of our quarterly results. Sales for the quarter totaled $201 million, while operating income was $46 million, and net income attributable to Rayonier was $23 million, or 18 cents per share. Pro forma EPS was also 18 cents per share, as we had no pro forma items in the quarter. Third quarter adjusted EBITDA of $83 million was above the prior year quarter, primarily due to favorable results in our real estate and Pacific Northwest timber segments, partially offset by lower contributions from our southern timber and New Zealand timber segments. As Dave noted, our real estate results were positively impacted by a timberland sale in New Zealand, which contributed $28 million of adjusted EBITDA and $13 million of net income attributable to Rayonier, or approximately 10 cents per share. On the bottom of page 5, we provide an overview of our capital resources and liquidity at quarter end, as well as a comparison to prior periods. Our cash available for distribution, or CAD, for the first 9 months was $222 million, compared to $144 million in the prior year period, primarily due to higher adjusted EBITDA, lower cash interest paid, and lower capital expenditures. A reconciliation of CAD to cash provided by operating activities and other GAAP measures is provided on page 8 of the financial supplement. We closed the quarter with $146 million of cash and roughly $975 million of debt. Our net debt of $829 million represented 16% of our enterprise value based on our closing stock price at quarter end. Note that these figures exclude $45 million of cash proceeds from Timberland and HBU sales that are currently held by LKE intermediaries and therefore classified as restricted cash. I'll now turn the call over to Doug to provide a more detailed review of our timber results.
Thanks, Mark. Good morning. Let's start on page 9 with our Southern Timber segment. Adjusted EBITDA in the third quarter of $23 million was $8 million and $1 million unfavorable to the prior quarter and the prior year quarter, respectively. Third quarter harvest volume of approximately 1.3 million tons was 160,000 tons and 26,000 tons lower than the prior quarter and the prior year quarter, respectively. Production in the first half of 2018 was unusually high due to strong demand in our markets, so we expected a decrease in harvest volume going into the third quarter, which was coupled with wet weather across the south. We were fortunate to avoid significant damage to our timberland properties from the recent hurricanes Florence and Michael. We sustained relatively minor damage with about 200 acres directly impacted by Hurricane Michael, and we expect to begin salvage operations on those acres in the fourth quarter. While we were fortunate to avoid significant damage to our properties, we do expect some near-term challenges in certain market areas that are proximate to hurricane damage, as there will be significant volumes of salvage wood on the market, likely for several quarters. Third quarter pine pulpwood stumpage prices of $16.74 per ton were 4.3% and 2.6% favorable compared to the prior quarter and the prior year quarter, respectively. The increase in pine pulpwood prices was due to wet weather along the East Coast reducing supply and therefore creating favorable spot markets. The increase over the prior year quarter was also due to the impact of salvage volume from the West Mims fire on the prior year quarter results. Pine saw timber stumpage prices of $25.55 per ton were 2.6 and 1.5% unfavorable to the prior quarter and the prior year quarter, respectively. The reduction in price compared to both periods was influenced by a general shift in volume from the East Coast to the Gulf states, combined with the impact of China tariffs on export prices. During the third quarter, China implemented a tariff of 25% on southern pine log exports, which has certainly had a negative impact on the economics of exporting logs from the south. We're working hard to maintain our southern export network despite the tariff headwinds and are continuing to monitor the situation closely. Hardwood prices of $13.34 per ton were 10% favorable to the prior quarter and 17% unfavorable compared to the prior year quarter. Hardwood markets are very localized and product specific, so changes in price tend to be driven by both product and geographic mix. Now moving to the Pacific Northwest Timber segment on page 10. Adjusted EBITDA of $10 million was $5 million unfavorable to the prior quarter and $2 million favorable to the prior year quarter. Third quarter harvest volume of 310,000 tons was 64,000 tons unfavorable to the prior quarter and 58,000 tons favorable to the prior year quarter. Favorable market conditions afford us an opportunity to accelerate volume into the first half of this year, and as a result, production volume in the third quarter slowed to allow us to meet our sustainable harvest targets. Removals in the prior year quarter were also negatively impacted by fire restrictions that did not reoccur this year. Delivered saw timber prices of $102.74 per ton were 1% unfavorable to the prior quarter and 15% favorable to the prior year quarter. The increase in saw timber prices versus the prior year quarter was driven by strong demand in both export and domestic markets. Delivered pulpwood prices of $48.93 per ton were 2% unfavorable to the prior quarter and 18% favorable compared to the prior year quarter. The decrease in pulpwood prices compared to the prior quarter was driven by geographic mix of sales, whereas the increase in pulpwood prices compared to the prior year quarter was due to price tension from competition from chip exports in the first half of this year. While overall pricing dynamics in the Northwest were relatively strong during the third quarter, recent market conditions have deteriorated. Our downstream customers in the Pacific Northwest prepared for the fire season by taking on additional inventories heading into the summer and have retained these log inventories as the fire season was uneventful compared to the prior year. Coupled with the announcement of tariffs on log exports in China, log prices have declined materially in the fourth quarter. Page 11 shows results and key operating metrics for our New Zealand timber segment. We continue to be pleased with the operating performance of our New Zealand timber segment, which delivered another solid quarter. Adjusted EBITDA in the third quarter of $24 million was $2 million unfavorable compared to the prior quarter, primarily due to lower prices in both domestic and export markets, and $4 million unfavorable compared to the prior year quarter due to a combination of lower volumes and lower weighted average prices. Third quarter harvest volume of 724,000 tons was 2% and 7% lower compared to the prior quarter and the prior year quarter, respectively. The modest volume variances were generally due to the timing of export shipments. Export sawtimber prices of $114.54 per ton decreased 5% compared to the prior quarter and increased 1% compared to the prior year quarter. Demand remains strong in China, but market uncertainty around the U.S.-China trade tensions, coupled with a devaluation of the Chinese yuan, caused a dip in log prices. However, we've seen a recent rebound in New Zealand export pricing as a result of lower U.S. log volume going into China. Domestic sawtimber prices of $80.74 per ton in U.S. dollar terms were 6% and 3% unfavorable to the prior quarter and prior year quarter, respectively, primarily due to changes in the New Zealand-U.S. exchange rate. In our trading segment, third quarter adjusted EBITDA of $0.3 million increased compared to the prior year quarter due to a reduction in export costs, partly offset by lower volumes. I'll now turn it over to Chris to cover real estate.
Thanks, Doug. As previously mentioned, our real estate segment results have been reclassified to now include New Zealand timberland sales. Highlighted on page 12, sales for our real estate segment totaled $36 million on roughly 7,300 acres sold, driven primarily by a non-strategic timberland sale on the North Island of New Zealand. Excluding improved development sales, we generated a weighted average price of $4,749 per acre. Sales in our improved development category reflect a steady pace of activity at our Wildlight development project. During the quarter, we closed 20 residential lots for a total of $843,000 or $42,000 per lot, including the first closing on townhome lots. We also closed on roughly 2 acres of commercial property for $500,000 or $225,000 per acre. In our unimproved development category, sales totaled $1.2 million, comprised of one sale totaling 126 acres in Bryan County, Georgia. In the rural category, sales totaled $4.5 million on 1,420 acres at an average price of roughly $3,200 per acre. While we closed fewer transactions in our rural places program than we did in the prior quarter, market interest remained strong and we are encouraged by our current pipeline of opportunities. In the non-strategic and timberlands category, sales of $29 million were comprised of 5,785 acres sold at an average price of roughly $5,000 per acre. The results include the sale of 4,996 productive acres in New Zealand for $28 million, or roughly $5,600 per acre. Following an extraordinarily strong year so far in real estate, we expect much lighter activity during the fourth quarter. As we've discussed in the past, our real estate results tend to be lumpy from quarter to quarter. For our Wildlight project, infrastructure development for the Village Center is largely complete, and most lots are either sold or under contract. Our focus is now shifting to refining development plans for the next area of residential development. I will now turn the call back over to Mark.
Thanks, Chris. As we look to the fourth quarter, we expect to achieve our prior full-year adjusted EBITDA guidance of $300 to $315 million before considering the impact of the third quarter New Zealand timberland sale. Based on our current outlook, we're reducing our full-year volume guidance in the U.S. South to a range of 5.6 to 5.7 million tons as we're pulling back our harvest activity in markets impacted by significant salvage volume following Hurricane Michael. We also expect that Q4 pricing in Southern Timber will be down modestly due to geographic mix. Overall, based primarily on the reduced volume, we expect that adjusted EBITDA will be modestly below our prior guidance. In our Pacific Northwest segment, we expect to achieve full-year harvest volumes of roughly 1.3 million tons and adjusted EBITDA toward the lower end of our prior guidance. While market conditions through the first 9 months have been very favorable, we're currently seeing some headwinds driven primarily by the China tariffs on export logs, coupled with high log inventories at domestic mills. In our New Zealand timber segment, we remain on track to achieve full-year harvest volumes of 2.6 to 2.7 million tons, and we expect to achieve adjusted EBITDA modestly above prior guidance. Prices have rebounded nicely in New Zealand as reduced log inventories in China, coupled with reduced wood flows from the U.S., have driven increased export demand in New Zealand. Lastly, in our real estate segment, we expect relatively light activity in the fourth quarter following an extraordinarily strong first 9 months of the year. I'll now turn the call back to Dave for closing comments.
Thanks, Mark. Before offering some closing remarks, I'd like to briefly address some organizational changes that were implemented recently within our real estate organization. As our Wildlight and Richmond Hill development projects have continued to gain momentum under Chris Core's leadership, we've decided that now is the right time to realign our resources to better support these projects over the long term. As such, Chris will assume full-time oversight of our improved and unimproved development business, including these two active development projects. Oversight of HBU and non-strategic land sales will transition to Rhett Rogers under the Portfolio Management Organization. Both Chris and Rhett will continue to report to me, and all real estate activity, including New Zealand land sales, will continue to be reported through the real estate segment. In addition, Mike Bell has been promoted to Vice President, Public Affairs and Communications. Mike will oversee all of Rainier's public affairs and communications efforts and will report to me. We're excited about these changes and feel they will help with both improved alignment and performance going forward. We've often discussed the quality and diversity of Rainier's portfolio, our pure play focus and nimble approach to capital allocation as key investment attributes that we believe differentiate us from our competitors. We're in the midst of some challenging and uncertain market conditions. Rising interest rates and declining housing affordability have impeded the pace of the housing recovery. In addition, tariffs on log exports into China have reduced market optionality, and labor availability continues to impact our business in a variety of ways. Notwithstanding these headwinds, we believe that Rainier is very well positioned based on the strength of our balance sheet and the construction of our portfolio, which is concentrated in high-quality markets. We've made some very measured and deliberate moves over the past 4 years to position the company for sustainable, long-term success. We recapitalized our New Zealand joint venture, and in so doing, also increased our equity stake ahead of a significant lift in the segment's financial performance. We realigned our Pacific Northwest portfolio to increase our short-term and long-term harvest potential, allowing us to capitalize on recent strong market conditions in the region. We made several significant portfolio moves in the South to increase our exposure to the strongest markets. These portfolio moves have all helped to improve our cash flow generation over the past few years, but importantly, they also improve our defensive positioning should markets deteriorate in the future. In addition, we've also carefully managed our balance sheet by fixing all our long-term debt at advantageous rates and extending maturities ahead of a significant rise in interest rates. These moves have been done with an eye towards maintaining a nimble and opportunistic approach to capital allocation decisions, all designed with the goal of building long-term value per share. Our team has done a great job working together, and I continue to be impressed by the tremendous dedication and focus of our employees. Despite challenging market conditions, we had another solid quarter and remain on track for a very strong year. In sum, I'm pleased with how well we're positioned and continue to be optimistic about our long-term prospects for our company. And this concludes our prepared remarks, and I'll now turn it back over to the operator for questions.
Thank you. At this time, to ask a question, please unmute your phone and press star 1 to enter the question queue. You may press star 2 to remove your question. Once again, please press star 1 at this time to enter the question queue. Our first question comes from Colin Mings with Raymond James. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning Colin.
Just to start, maybe Doug, just in the prepared remarks, you referenced pricing has deteriorated materially in the Pacific Northwest. Can you just maybe quantify that, just given it sounded like even as we've moved here into the beginning of the fourth quarter, you've seen further deterioration. So maybe just talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. So yeah, as we mentioned on the call, we continue to see both strong domestic export pricing in that third quarter. But then late in the fourth quarter, things started to change. You know, the mills were flushed with log inventories, and that lack of the summer fires, they really had built up towards that. And then we started to see additional supply come on as China imposed export tariffs that ranged from 5 to 10% based on the species and size. And the threat was actually at 25% to begin with. So we started to see the export business start to pull back even before those tariffs really came into place. And so we're continuing to see that happen. And the perfect storm kind of happened At the same time that lumber prices took a sharp correction, we had imports up over 25% from year over year from other places offshore, and then pessimism over housing starts. So one thing I think is that these lower lumber prices, we believe that a significant amount of that lumber import will start to not be economical anymore, and demand, even during the seasonal slowdown, will start to erode that domestic mill inventory through the remainder of the quarter. We were pleased with our decision to accelerate those harvests in the first half of the year, and believe that that strategy allows us to capture a significant amount of the pricing upside that occurred this year, and it'll flow into our full-year average pricing results on a year-over-year basis. So as we've seen it going forward, we think that the right decision was to pull that volume forward and sit back and allow some of this volume to work off the inventories and see what's going to happen with the export markets as we move forward.
Okay. No better way to maybe quantify that in terms of like quarter to date or quarter over quarter type of deterioration, recognizing there's a lot of nuances, but just overall kind of the degree of deterioration.
Yeah, I don't think we want to get into our specific pricing in the quarter, Colin. Obviously, there are a number of third-party services that track log pricing in the Pacific Northwest, and you'll see a little bit of a lag effect there. But like Doug said, the Q4 thus far has been a bit of a perfect storm, and so we don't want to be too overreact regarding kind of what's happened so far in Q4, because we do think that the longer-term trends are certainly positive in the Northwest.
Okay, fair enough. And then, Dave, just as we think about the New Zealand timberland sale in the quarter, can you maybe just talk a little bit more about how that came about and just how does that acreage, obviously very healthy pricing there, how does that acreage compare to the rest of your New Zealand position?
You bet. We've always sort of, some of this to some extent gets back to our broader capital allocation posture as it relates to timberland sales and sort of keeping an eye towards looking for opportunistic sales. And we put in place an effort over the last couple of years. We identified two properties that were in the southern portion of the North Island that were very remote relative to our base of operations. They were decent properties, but they were remote, so little harder to get to from a from an access standpoint, less efficient from an export standpoint. And so we put in place an effort to capitalize on the rise in the markets in New Zealand and sell those. We sold one of them about a year ago, and then this is the second one that we've completed, and so now we're sort of out of that region. This property, in terms of its attributes, it had an average plantation age of about 16 years, and that's a little older than you would typically have on a perfectly regulated forest. So it was above average from that perspective. It was a lease property. It did not include a fee simple ownership. From a productivity standpoint, it was below average relative to the rest of our claim, but importantly, from a valuation standpoint, it was also 100% ground-based logging, which translates to decent value. So overall, we were very happy with the sale and happy to be able to take that capital and look for opportunities to recycle it elsewhere.
That's helpful. And then maybe, Dave, just sticking with New Zealand, can you just update us on the status of your joint venture partner stake there? I recognize you're limited to some degree given the litigation, but just any update there, just given the number of headlines coming out and where things stand with the Stafford offer would be helpful.
You bet. So Stafford has largely been successful in their effort to acquire all of Faunos. We expect that closing to occur any time now, and they're going through the orderly process of transitioning their participation in the joint venture that we control in New Zealand. And as we've said to folks before, we know them well, and we've had a long working relationship with them, and so we see the transition being fairly orderly. And as it relates to the ongoing litigation, that's something that we'll probably not discuss at this juncture.
All right, and then just one last one from me, and I'll turn it over. Mark, I mean, you've spent a lot of time discussing timberland markets and just returns to the asset class over time. Just kind of against that backdrop, just maybe talk a little bit about what you're seeing in terms of deal flow. It looks like you guys made a total of, about $7, $8 million of timberland acquisitions during the quarter. On prior calls, kind of been upbeat about the deal environment. Obviously, you've closed on a number of deals over the last year or two. So just what are you seeing in terms of deal flow? Is there any shift in buyer activity or values or discount rates or anything that you're seeing just given some of the market dynamics here between some concerns near-term about housing, the trends in the Pacific Northwest maybe softening a bit? Just what are you seeing out there in the timberland markets?
I mean, I guess at a very high level, and I'll invite, you know, Doug or Dave to comment as well. I mean, I'd say we continue to see a pretty robust timberland M&A market. We've obviously been less active this year than we have been in years past, and I think that that's just a reflection of, you know, there haven't been properties to come to market, or we haven't sort of won in auction processes for properties that have come to market that we believe were particularly additive to our portfolio. And so, you know, we've continued to do a number of bolt-on acquisitions, smaller in size. You know, we're content to hit, you know, singles and doubles, you know, when we don't see larger opportunities that really fit our needs at the time. But overall, I'd say we've continued to see a pretty steady pace of activity. And, you know, just to be clear, I'd say the timberland market as a whole doesn't tend to overreact to the noise that we see in the market around, you know, kind of monthly housing stats and things of that nature. You know, keep in mind this is an asset class that's underwritten on a, you know, 25 to 50 year DCF, you know, making assumptions regarding long-term sustainable harvest flows and trend line prices. And so, you know, we tend to not see the market, you know, correct meaningfully, the private market correct meaningfully relative to these, you know, statistics that we see coming out on a regular basis. I'd say the China situation is certainly creating some noise in the market. Obviously, we had all expected that China was going to present a good opportunity for export out of the south, and it's been a meaningful component of export out of the northwest, and there's a lot of uncertainty around that right now. But I'd say overall discount rates, you know, maybe there's been a bias towards you know, seeking higher IRRs in transactions given the rise in interest rates. But again, you know, timberland tends to be valued on a real DCF basis. And so while the overall interest rate environment, you know, fluctuates and is certainly up over time, I wouldn't say people's view of real long-term discount rates have changed significantly.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd add to that, Colin, is that, you know, the fact that we've had not a lot of closings is not indicative of the activity level. It's been a very busy and active year. But having said that, I think we, and this kind of gets back to some of my prepared remarks, you know, we have a bias towards being in higher quality markets and pursuing higher quality properties. And we view that both from a defense standpoint and an offense standpoint. And so, you know, that has been, there's been a more limited opportunity of those types of properties out there, and we're just going to continue to be disciplined and kind of stick to our knitting on that particular front.
All right. Thank you for all the color there. I'll turn it over.
Our next question comes from Ketan Mamtora with BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Thank you. Just first question, again, sticking with this tariff issue, can you comment at all, you know, what you're seeing in terms of volumes on your southern exports? I recall that you all had talked about doubling it from 2017 levels. What have you all seen so far since this got implemented?
Sure, this is Doug. Yeah, so as you mentioned, we're in the process of doubling our volumes, and year to date we've done approximately 170,000 tons. But in the last quarter, really, and threats started coming in really in July as things started to move forward with that, we've definitely slowed down our export volumes out of the south. If you recall, before we talked, we do about 2 to 3% of our total harvest has been in the export market, and Our own properties, we've stepped that back, as we mentioned in our comments, and are probably just trying to keep the doors open. So we've taken a considerable step back in the amount of volume that's now being sent to China.
Yeah, Ketan, to be clear, I mean, it's not particularly advantageous to export volume to China with a 25% export tariff. But that said, we're trying to maintain that network because we do see China as a longer-term opportunity. So, again, we don't want to, you know, sort of shut down the relationships and the infrastructure that we've created around that business in reaction to the current trade war. Our hope and expectation is over the long run that will still be an opportunity for us. But it's definitely not an economical business today.
Yeah, and that's – been shown in the results. You know, this is not just Rainier, this is out of the South in general, but in second quarter we saw about 630,000 cubic meters export out of the South, and by Q3 that dropped to 400,000 cubic meters to give you kind of a relative impact of the trade wars on things, and expect that to even decrease a bit more in Q4. You know, while it negatively impacts these southern markets, it does have an offsetting positive impact in New Zealand, where, as we mentioned before, we're seeing increases in our prices, and we export about 50% of our volume out of New Zealand. So it's from one side, it's taken away, and it's adding to the other side.
Yeah, I guess that's certainly a positive message in all of this, is that, you know, we think we've got nice diversification around this issue in the sense that, you know, the China wood demand continues to be very robust, and they've got to get it from somewhere, and New Zealand is the biggest log exporter to China, and so as these U.S. trade flows have fallen off, we've seen a quicker rebound than we anticipated in New Zealand log prices, and so we've had a nice offsetting effect there.
And just one more thing to add to that is another thing we've seen is there's fewer exports of logs, particularly from the Northwest, but also other commodities out of the U.S. That means there's more ships available out there, and so they're turning towards New Zealand to look for opportunities to export logs from there. So we've been constrained by shipping, and we're seeing price increases there, but with this kind of new influx of shipping capacity, we've seen some prices come down our shipping rates also in this quarter, and really going in the next quarter, we believe it's going to happen. So kind of another offset that you might not expect that's flowed through from the less commodities coming from the U.S. to China.
Got it. That's very helpful, Color. I really appreciate it. And then just turning to, you know, sort of U.S. South, on the domestic side, have you seen, you know, with this sharp drop in lumber prices, have you seen any signs of you know, people pulling back on these, you know, sawmill projects that have really, you know, come up quite a bit over the last 12 months? Are you seeing any signs of people either postponing it or pulling back, or even sort of any signs of, you know, kind of caution on bidding for stumpage?
Yeah, this is Doug again. So we haven't heard of anybody pulling back on their projects. Again, I think a lot of people feel that this is a short-term thing and not the long-term, so I think they're continuing moving forward. Any delays that we've heard of so far on the sawmills have been more around resourcing and getting equipment and people to work on the project. So we haven't heard of anyone who's specifically said they're pulling back based on kind of what we believe is going to be a short-term correction. On the stumpage side, as probably we've talked about for the last couple quarters, we didn't see our southern stumpage prices run up with the lumber, and we also haven't seen them go down with the lumber. So, you know, they haven't been correlated to the lumber prices at all. And so I guess while it would have been nice to see them run up with the lumber, the other side of the coins have been very stable, and we've just continued moving forward with what's been going on for the rest of the year.
Got it. That's very helpful. Good luck into 2019.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Anthony Pettinari with Citi. Your line is open.
Good morning. This is actually Randy Toll sitting in for Anthony. I guess my first question is, how are export price realizations out of New Zealand in October? You mentioned they rebounded pretty nicely. What kind of pricing uplift have you seen in 4Q over the 3Q average?
Yeah, so what I would say is that as we look into our November and December shipments, we're seeing pricing that's comparable to our second quarter that we had going into that. So we did see that dip in Q3, but we're starting to see pricing that's very comparable to our Q2. And as I mentioned, we're seeing some cost savings on shipping. So we're looking at favorable Q4 compared to Q3 and more comparable to Q2.
And Randy, this is Dave. I'd add to that, you know, one of the things that we track very carefully is the level of log inventory in the ports in China. And as we've seen the drop in shipments coming from the U.S. Associated with this tariff activity, we haven't seen a drop in the takeaway, and so as a result, we've seen the inventory drop pretty dramatically in China. It's now at roughly 3 million cubic meters, and the ratio of demand to inventory has come to a level that we haven't seen this low in probably about 5-6 years, and so. It's really the reason that we've seen this fairly quick turnaround in pricing out of New Zealand. And as Doug mentioned, you know, we have a further benefit from you know, lower shipping rates as there's been less activity out of North America. So, you know, it really gets back to that diversification thing that Mark talked about earlier.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then just looking at slide 7, sales generated using the delivered model were 34% of sales, which I believe is the highest since you guys started breaking that out. Was there anything in particular driving that, or how should we think about that?
You're talking with respect to the Southern Timber?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think this is necessarily a change in our methodology or things like that. It's a matter of kind of removals, and what we saw is we had lower stumpage due to the wet weather, so it's really more of a factor of the sales process and what happened, what type of volume. So we're able to keep our delivery crews running through the wetter weather, and stumpage some of those crews, they had to move off, and that's probably more what you're seeing there. We have had a slight increase as we've moved through the years. We have moved more to deliver, but it's really very market specific. Each wood basket we evaluate where we think we get the most value, whether it be selling stumpage or delivered. And so it's a combination of where the harvests are from and also that wet weather impacting stumpage removals.
Yeah, I suspect part of that is driven by geographic mix, whereas we tend to have more of a delivered model out of the Gulf states and more towards stumpage in the Atlantic region. Is that fair, Doug?
Yeah, it's a combination,
yeah.
Definitely. And one thing we may see going into Q4 is with the Hurricane Michael's impacts and the salvages to be done, we have seen stumpage crews move off of our estate to go do the salvage work, while the delivered crews we've kept with them because we have long-term contracts. So we could see that kind of be a considerable impact in Q4, but again, it's more a short-term thing that's happened.
Okay, that's very helpful. I'll turn it over. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Charan Sangera with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi guys, good morning. A lot of good color this quarter. Just, you know, maybe a follow-up question on the export situation out of the U.S. South. Is there any other markets you can divert to, given the situation?
Yeah, we're exploring other markets, and you know, we're aware that some other folks are sending to India, and we export to India from New Zealand. There's also folks exporting to the Middle East, Pakistan, other places like that. So we're evaluating those options as we go forward. But at this point in time, we've spent a lot of effort to develop our network into China, and you know, don't want to pull back on that right this minute. So we're exploring those opportunities and looking how we can move some of that wood. But we do think that long term, China has the largest opportunities for growth for us, and so we're focused on keeping our relationships with those customers at this time.
Okay, all right, thanks. And just back to kind of the broader view on the U.S. housing market, given your guys' involvement and development now with Wildlight, what are you guys seeing on the ground? Any, you know, your talks with your customers there? Is there any kind of shift in near-term sentiment?
This is Dave. I'll take that. I think there, you know, I think in general, we view this as sort of a continued steady growth pattern on housing. You know, I think overall we expect housing starts to come in at, you know, roughly that 1.3 million level. I think, you know, it's key to remember that you know, we've got some pretty strong markets in various regional areas. And I know there's been a lot of media attention of late on sort of the housing market, quote-unquote, cooling with the effect of rising interest rates and affordability. But it's also important to sort of look at a bigger picture there. And, you know, there has been about an 80 basis point increase in mortgage rates, and we've seen about a 6% increase in median home prices. But don't forget there's also been a fair bit of noise around the housing stats associated with these two hurricanes, as well as significant rainfall in Texas. And the other thing that hasn't been, you know, sort of touched on as much is there's been a pretty meaningful rise in median household income of about 5.6%. And so, you know, you put all that together, and while affordability has ticked down slightly, it's still at pretty healthy levels from a long-term perspective. And so, you know, I think the thing that we're most encouraged about, we certainly see that in our Wildlight project, is strong growth in single family. We've seen single family grow by roughly 6% year over year, and we're continuing to see repair and remodel growth, which makes up about 40% of the lumber market. You know, that's up by 7.5%. So, you know, I'd say overall we're generally pleased with how things are going. And another thing to keep in mind is there's been a fairly large influx of imported lumber outside of North America into this market to really capitalize on this spike in lumber prices that we saw earlier this year. And we don't see that necessarily occurring downstream. And as we see more of this southern lumber capacity come online, you know, it's going to push that flow of imports out as a short order effect. And so that's kind of our view in general. And in our mind, it really, you know, gets back to it gets back to the theme I've touched on earlier is, you know, for us, it's all about being in the best and strongest markets. We have a nice presence in the markets that feed both the Florida and Texas housing markets, both of which are very healthy. And once we get past the near-term noise associated with, you know, whether it's hurricanes or rain events, you know, we expect to see a nice response in those markets.
All right, thanks. You touched a bit on affordability. Could you just refresh us on what kind of price points that you guys have for residential, or so your customers have for residential and Wildlight?
Yeah, hey, this is Chris. On average, single family is sort of right in around $300,000, you know, but there's a range, of course, you know, down to the lower twos and up in the fours.
Okay. That's it from you guys. Thanks.
Next question comes from John Babcock with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning. Just wanted to follow up. You talked a little bit about some of the uncertainty you're seeing in China and the impact that's having on New Zealand. Could you just provide a little bit more color around that? You know, generally, if there are certain markets that are being impacted, you know, the extent to which, you know, that impact has been felt, that sort of color.
The impact, I mean, what we talked about generally is that, you know, the I guess last quarter we talked about the noise around the trade tensions kind of causing some pullback in the market in New Zealand, which I think was a bit counterintuitive because, you know, if you see lower trade flows coming from the U.S., the expectation would be that New Zealand would pick up. And that's, in fact, you know, what's occurred during the course of Q3. So while prices ticked down in New Zealand in Q3, what we've said in the press release and on the call is that, you know, we've seen those prices rebound pretty nicely kind of towards the end of Q3 and kind of what we're seeing so far in Q4.
And I think, okay, you know, one of the things important also in that, during that time, we saw the Chinese yuan devalue, and that impacted the pricing. But as demand's fallen below that level of comfort on the inventory ratio that Dave mentioned, we've seen the prices come back up, even though the yuan hasn't recovered. So the demand has increased kind of the price that the person's willing to pay in China to get that same log.
Okay. I guess what I was getting at, though, is whether or not you're actually seeing from customers, though, in China, you know, with both kind of the growth that they're exhibiting that's slowed a little bit in the last quarter, you know, and also just generally the tariffs overall seem to be having an impact. I was just wondering if you're seeing any end market demand slow down.
No, we really haven't to date. We've been, you know, very successful. As we mentioned before, we're looking to hit our volume targets for the year, and you know, the timing we had around exports in Q3, a little bit was that as we saw some weaker markets at that point in time, and so we look to have some more volume in Q4. So to date, we're planning on hitting our export targets.
Okay, thank you. And then just the last question I had was just on acquisition strategy. I was wondering how that might change if you were to enter a downturn, you know, and then also, you know, what markets right now seem to be a good fit with your footprint and also considering valuation, you know, where you might target acquisitions.
Yeah, and I think this gets back to what I discussed earlier in terms of having, you know, a general bias towards higher quality properties. And I think that we have a point of view, and you certainly see this in our investor materials, that the lower quality markets have not been priced with as much of a discount as you might otherwise expect. And so I think as you move forward, if you were to get into a period where you did have a downturn, you know, then it gets to what's your financial capacity and sort of where those opportunities are. And I think this is an area where I think we're very well positioned. We have been organically delevering for the past few years. We have a pretty meaningful capacity right now from an incremental debt standpoint, and we're going to just continue to be patient and stick with our strategy of going after, you know, higher quality properties. It doesn't mean that we're not going to look at properties that are of lower quality, but they're going to have to be priced accordingly for us to go after them.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Steve Chercover with Davidson. Your line is open.
Good morning, Dave. Hi, Mark. A lot of my questions have really been answered, but I wanted to just drill into a couple things. When you were referring to increasing your stake in New Zealand, I assume you're referring to the opportunistic incremental purchases you've done over the last several years?
Well, I think really what we were referring to, Steve, was when we did the recapitalization transaction, we effectively diluted our partner there down. So we increased our stake from 65% to 77% via that recapitalization transaction.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm referring to. Thanks. And Stafford's privatization of Fonos doesn't change your right of first refusal on their stake in Matariki, does it?
Well, to be clear, there's not a right of first refusal. There's a right of first offer, and suffice it to say that with the Fonos acquisition, really largely being, it's not completed yet, I believe, but it's essentially done. Where Stafford has gotten the over their 90% threshold to force a compulsory acquisition of the minority stake there, they will effectively be our new partner in Matariki.
Got it. Okay. And then, do you have a sense of just how much acreage was impacted by Hurricane Michael and therefore will be subject to salvage?
I believe Doug's got some stats on that.
Yeah, I do. So I'll break these out for you a little bit, and then we can talk about how much could possibly be salvaged. So the Florida Forest Service estimates that 2.8 million acres of forest land were moderately to catastrophically impacted by the hurricane, with estimated timber losses of $1.3 billion. Approximately 350,000 acres are considered a complete loss, and an additional million acres were severely damaged, meaning 75% of the timber will require salvage or cleanup. And that's an estimated 32 million tons of pine and 23 million tons of hardwood. So this is obviously a Herculean task, and unfortunately they're working against time as the wood ages and deteriorates.
Yeah.
The Georgia Forestry Commission shows damage to more than 2 million acres of forest land impacted by the storm, with an estimated timber value of about $374 million. And that's composed of around 11 million tons of pine and 7.7 million tons of hardwood. And there's about 379,000 acres that they also say are severely damaged or a complete loss. And then Alabama, it was much smaller in that area, but they did also have some damage, and they're talking of roughly 50,000 acres that need to be salvaged. So obviously it's a huge, huge task in front of folks. And the impacts of the storm in the industry are hard to assess at this point. You know, from what we've seen, a lot of it was snapped off due to the high winds. And when that happens, from my experience, usually those trees stand for a long time, and then it gets to a certain point, and they shake violently, and the fibers separate before the tree snaps. So right in the eye, a lot of that timber is going to be tough to make lumber out of and things like that. But as you get further away, you'll have more blowdown. And those are the ones I think will be salvageable for lumber. And from what I'm currently hearing and what we've seen before, landowners are immediately focused on those higher value logs. So there may actually be an increase of saw logs and a decrease of pulpwood production in the local markets for the first few months as folks chase that higher value. And that looks to be what we're seeing. And we've heard about some local sawmills looking to put in wet decks to take on those logs. So the market impacts are going to be really hard to assess at this point in time until we understand a little bit further what's going on. We could see kind of the periphery markets around them have less supply as salvage crews move into that area. And as I mentioned, we could actually see a reduction in pulpwood to start with as folks are trying to capture those logs, those higher value logs. So it's a tricky situation. The main question is how long will the wood be recovered before it deteriorates? And we did a study looking back at the success of the salvage efforts from Hurricane Hugo in 1989, which impacted about 4.5 million acres. And they were successful salvaging about 3 tons per acre when it was all said and done. So obviously a lot of wood on the ground, but it's very difficult. A lot of it's not recoverable because of the form it's in. And just as I mentioned, you're working against time. There seems to be a general consensus that the logs should last for 6 months in the field over this winter time in particular. And that's consistent with what the harvesting crews who've left us, they tell us they're going to salvage and they'll be away for 6 months. So it's not to say that they won't salvage more than 6 months, but we expect the main attempts by kind of these non-local crews targeting those higher value products will occur over that period of time. So it's really difficult to just assess when you have 4 to 5 million acres that's on the ground. But unfortunately, kind of past experience shows that there'll be a flush of wood for a while, and then that's going to slow down, and a lot of it goes into how do they deal with the aftermath. And that's been our own case when we had hurricanes hit us in the 80s and 90s. We ended up going after the higher-value products and then having to basically use bulldozers and chains and push down standing timber and burn it and get site prepared and move forward. So it's really hard to assess right now, but that gives you a sense of the scale that the teams have to work for and work with. So we expect that there'll be impacts on the local markets, and then there'll be impacts on those kind of periphery markets. But thankfully, we only had 200 acres of our salvage, so it's small on us directly. But we are watching, and that's why we've made the decision to pull back some volume in Q4 so we can assess this and see how it's going to impact these both the local markets. And as I mentioned, the interesting thing is we've had 7 crews to date, and I know of another 3 to 5 that are considering leaving over here on the Atlantic coast to go do salvage. So the impact it could have on these markets as there's fewer crews producing for the local mills. So it's a very dynamic situation right now.
Thank you for that, all that detail. You mentioned, burning it. Maybe that's the one thing that's different than back in the Hurricane Hugo era is the emergence of biomass. So maybe that's the long-term, destination for a lot of that blowdown. But I was also wondering, between the hurricane and there's, been recent articles about folks who were incented to plant trees 20, 30 years ago down in the south and the resultant oversupply. Do you think you can play into that and maybe serve as a source of liquidity for folks who otherwise can't get out? And obviously it'll have to meet all your return thresholds.
Yeah, look, we're well capitalized and we're always looking for opportunities. And if we see a dislocation in the market that we think is short term in nature, but we can capitalize on a long term opportunity, we'll certainly focus on that. I think the thing to keep in mind regarding these recent hurricanes, this is, like Doug said, a Herculean task to address all this salvage volume, but it will be relatively short term in nature. The longer term impact is there's a lot of timber that's older timber that's kind of taken out of production. So, you could see those markets be supply constrained on a longer-term basis.
Steve, the other thing I'd add is that the reference to the article around the Conservation Reserve Program, keep in mind that most of that was concentrated in poor markets, and so it's not really as much of an impact in the footprint that we operate in.
Okay. Thank you all for the call.
As a reminder, please press star 1 if you have a question. Please stand by for further questions. We do have a question coming from Colin Mings with Raymond James. Your line is open, Colin.
Thanks. Just one quick from me, just going back to Steve's question and Doug's commentary. Just as you think about the movement in these of the logging crews and the salvage efforts, can you maybe just clarify, do you expect that to impact volumes, kind of looking out over the next at least few quarters, or also costs? Are you having to pay a little bit more to retain some of the crews that you have as it relates to some of your delivered log sales activity?
No, primarily volume, and it's really the stumpage crews that are leaving that we see that the impact on the volumes. With respect to costs, obviously salvage costs cost more, and that's something that those crews may be going over there, but locally, no, we're not seeing the impact of that having to pay to keep the crews. It's very hard and very dangerous work to do this type of salvage. You have a lot of trees that are broken off, and it's like pick up sticks crisscrossed, and so that's the reason the costs go up for that salvage work over there. And but locally, we don't see the impact over here.
Okay, thanks.
And we have no further questions at this time, so I will hand the call back for closing.
All right, this is Mark McHugh. Thanks, everybody, for joining the call today, and I look forward to catching up with some of you by phone later.
And with that, we'll conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time.